patrons. How you doing? This is Lawrence from More to That, the writer and illustrator of it, to be exact. And I am recording this, I guess, behind the scenes look into my latest post, The Quest to the Unlived Life. And before I even begin, before I say anything about that, I just want to say thank you so much for being a patron. The number of patrons I have ultimately doesn't matter in regards to the scope of my gratitude that I have for each and every one of you, whether the number is in the tens or the hundreds or wherever it ends up going. I am just truly grateful that you guys are just kind of coming along this journey with me and are providing a tangible way to do that. And that's just something that, I don't know, I think about it, and More to That's been around for about 6 months now. The 6 month anniversary was on the 21st. So it's just crazy to me that there are people out there that are reading it, that are sharing the posts, that are just having fun with it, because I'm having a lot of fun doing it. So I just hope that I can continue this journey for quite some time and have you guys kind of continue and, you know, ride along with me. So this is basically an experiment. I kind of, you know, I see More to That, and I see Patreon, and I see all the things that I'm doing here as kind of one big lab of ideas where I'm just kind of throwing things around, seeing what sticks, seeing what doesn't, experimenting with different types of formats, whether it's audio, whether my posts are, you know, 3,000 words all the way up to, I think this one was close to 10,000, I think a little over 9,000 words. And just, I don't know, it's fun just kind of taking the time to try different things out, because I really think that in the end, experimentation is what gives way to, you know, just the greatest things that we ever as humans can accomplish. So this is just kind of my little way of trying that out. And this in itself, me in front of a mic recording, talking to you, whoever you may be in the ether, this is in itself is part of an experiment as well. I think that when it comes to writing, there's a lot that goes into that. And, you know, I wrote a look into my writing process about a few weeks ago, and that was cool to do. But I feel like there's a value of a more kind of passive type of communication where you could, you know, you could be cleaning, or you could, you know, be in the bathroom doing your thing, you know what I'm saying? Whereas number one and number twos. And during that whole time, you're just there listening to what, you know, I have to say, instead of having to kind of sit down, dedicate all your focus onto reading something. So that's, you know, obviously that's the benefit of something like the podcast format. And I don't know if that's something that I'll go into in the future. But for now, my focus is definitely on writing, and this is just a way for me to talk to you guys without kind of, you know, having you have to sit down and really read through everything. And since this is a behind-the-scenes kind of look into it, I think that this is a good place to start. So let's get into it. Let's get into it. All right. So the whole purpose of this post, you know, it really is linked to the prior one with the natural selection piece. And there's, you know, when I think about topics that I want to write about, I don't really have this kind of big master document that has all my things listed out, all these potential topics. And then I just kind of do a little roulette wheel and just spin that sucker around and just choose something and then just write on it. It's not... I know there's a lot of writers that do that, and it works well for them. But for me, it just, I don't know, it just doesn't really do the trick. I think there's really something about when you're in the moment and there's something that you feel and there's an idea that's been kind of brewing in you and growing within you, and you just want to grab that thing and expand upon it. And I think a lot of the time, I wrote this in my prior Patreon post, but the author and neuroscientist Sam Harris, he has this great quote where he says, "Writing is the technology of the mind." And I truly believe that. I think that there's something about the format of writing where when you sit down and you actually, you have, let's say you have a loose topic you want to write about, right? So like in this case with my natural selection post and even this one, the quest to the unlived life, you think you have a general idea of what you already want to write about, but you don't really know what's going on within the crevices of your mind until you sit down and try to get your thoughts out onto another canvas. And I think that's the power of creative outlets and just creativity in general, is that, you know, the mind is such a complicated thing, and that, you know, that's the most cliched and kind of sounds like a platitude at this point, but it really is. And you know, one thing that I touch on in the last post is that we really don't have any idea what's going on in there. Like, it's fucking crazy. So, you know, when you think you have an idea about something, you think you have a general understanding, generally it tends to go way deeper than that. And a lot of the times it's kind of walking around in your subconscious. So the biggest thing is to try to take that out and to bring it to the forefront and allow it to somehow materialize itself into a tangible form where you could actually try to study its features and understand what's happening beneath the hood. I feel that a lot of the ideas we have, or we think we know we have, are very much at the surface level. And once you choose to really pick that item, then you could kind of delve into it deeper, and then things just kind of pop up. Things that you didn't even know you thought just pop up. But the only way you could really get that out is to be intentioned about going deeper into that idea or that seed. So that's what I think writing does. And I think that's the power of choosing a topic where you feel a gravitational pull to it, rather than you going through like some Word document or Evernote document and finding the thing that you feel like would be the best thing to write about at the time. Now, granted, that's, you know, I think everyone has their own process. Everyone has their own way of doing things. I don't know if this kind of approach is the best way. Once again, I'm still experimenting with it. So I'm just trying to find out what works best. But in this case, with the natural selection post and the quest to the unlived life, you know, I'm kind of putting these together as a series because they really are a series of posts. I think there were a lot of things that I had to think about in terms of why it's so hard to do the things we should do and why it's so easy to do the things we should not do, right? And I think that is one of the core struggles of humanity, you know, ever since the dawn of our existence. And it's something that really, there's something deep there. And people have written about this, you know, pretty much tirelessly, whether it's just talking about the effects of procrastination or how to manage your time better, or, you know, just do the work. Like these kinds of mantras. And I think while there is utility in that approach, I feel like there's another way that you can write about this or communicate the ideas behind this without the kind of the typical structure that has accompanied them. And that's what I decided to do for the last post. So as you're aware by now, there's a kind of video game structure to the post, where essentially natural selection, or our evolutionary designer, he's the guy that constructed this video game. And I thought, you know, the video game approach I thought was interesting because I really do believe there's a lot of wisdom baked into a video game. I think that the narrative surrounding it is pretty powerful, the formula behind it, because it's done in a way where the developer or the game's creator is really trying to build these puzzles and difficult, I guess, problems that the player has to go through. But at the same time, he or she has to make that level beatable. Like, That's such a mind fuck. Like, as the developer, you're making this level and you're like, yeah, this is a hard one. This is a great one. But he has to beat it as well. So I have to also make the solutions really good too. Like, so you're trying to make the hardest problem possible that is on the edge of beatable. And it being beatable has to be intuitive and not too difficult, because if that's the case, then people will just give up on the game and you don't want that, right? So you really have to tiptoe this line very carefully. And when I think about that analogy, I really think about natural selection. I think about us as humans. I think about how we've evolved, because we really are at this continuous struggle, right? Between this really difficult problem of, hey, how do I get past resistance and do what I need to do to make my life more meaningful, purposeful, and intentioned? And then at the same time, you know what those solutions are, but they're so hard to grasp. They're so hard to grasp and then just do. And I think that's what natural selection has done, is build in this dichotomy for us, where the problems are so well laid out in the form of resistance, but it has also given us the solutions. It has given us the power of rationality, the ability to imagine solutions, the ability to look forward. It's given all that in combination with this very weird inability to get anything done. And when I say get anything done, I think that's where a big part of the misconception surrounding the concept of resistance and procrastination are, is that it's not really about productivity. And the universality of this issue is what caused me to write this post. Because sure, there is the form of resistance in terms of, you know, pursuing your passion projects or doing that side hustle that you know gravitates to your spirit the most. But this really applies to your relationships with people. And that really is universal. So yes, there's many things about, hey, you should wake up by 5-6 in the morning, so because that's when you're the most productive and you could crank out some serious code or all this other shit. But also at the same time, this issue is fundamentally at the heart of how we arrive at the best possible relationships with others. And one thing that happened just kind of personally for me is that I got married last month, and you know, it wasn't just like, hey, we're just getting married one day. No, there was like this evolution, this kind of gradual process for that to occur. And there's just a lot that goes into what it means to have a meaningful relationship with a partner. And the same tenets of what you would find in the kind of struggle to pursue your passion project and to get your ass up and to actually move on something, there's so many parallels with that and trying to develop a relationship or construct a relationship that is healthy and is meaningful and is beneficial. So for me, in that essence, I saw so many parallels between the two. And this really stretches out to everything: your relationship with your parents, your siblings, you know, with your colleagues, or the way that you manage kind of your persona in different elements. Like, all this is tied in together and follows this kind of formulaic arc. And this is what was kind of behind the scenes of, in my mind, of creating this post. And once I had the kind of tenet or the kernel of the idea in my head, and knowing how this issue stretches out more than just your kind of work life, quote unquote, I knew that this was an important topic for me to touch. And when I do touch a topic, there's a personal resonance that obviously has to go into it. But also, I think there's something about the element that this is going to resonate with some other folks as well, because I could see how this could be a universal issue. And I really like to zoom out a lot first and to see, okay, what are the things that, regardless of who you are, your personality, what specific struggles you may be going through, what specific triumphs you may be experiencing, what is something, what is a topic that I think can impact a lot of people? And there's a lot of connection that this topic would have to folks. And the only way you could really do that is by zooming out a lot and looking at the human condition. And I think that's what a lot of my posts have done so far. And it's not to say that I'll continue this kind of narrative, because I actually already have posts in the pipeline where I'm focusing specifically on a narrow band of a subject. So this is kind of in flux. It once again is also an experiment to see what works best for me. But for this particular one, I thought that I hit a subject that is widespread across humanity in general. And when I thought about how I wanted to structure it, when I thought about a video game, I thought about, okay, let's think back to like my days when I was playing like Nintendo, you know, and I may be older than some of y'all, younger than some of y'all, but you know, I remember Nintendo. I clearly remember that one Kung Fu game where you're just this guy going through each level, just like, bah, 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 just like you're just whooping ass, you know, and then you're kind of just trying to like get to the next level above. So the dude's like literally climbing a tower after he just like fucking chopping off the, you know, like just punching people's faces, kicking their legs, and you know, throwing ninja stars and shit. It was pretty tight. So, you know, and he just keeps traversing up until he gets to the main boss. And I know Mortal Kombat does that. There's, you know, the whole going up a tower, it's not the most like up-to-date narrative of a video game, you know? Like, I can't think of a recent one that does that. But I needed to kind of structure this post in a somewhat linear way so it doesn't get too out of hand. And I'm like trying to create some like World of Warcraft scenario. And that's just like, okay, that would take like 100,000 words to try to do. So I wanted to keep it a little simple in that sense, but also provide it with the narrative of a game. And so just two books that really helped to shape how I wanted to approach this. One is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, a super, super influential book for me. It really helped me to know what it was that I was facing when I couldn't, you know, write a word or felt like I couldn't make any music. I felt like I couldn't identify what this weird force was that was holding me back. And sometimes you have to name something. Sometimes you have to name that force in order for you to develop a strategy to try to beat it. And that's what I think this post I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to communicate to the reader to identify what those things, what is that thing that's holding you back from doing the most meaningful things that you can do with life. And Stephen Pressfield just really broke it down and identified that force as resistance. And when you actually put a name to something, I think that really changes the texture of the problem. It solidifies it. It congeals it. And I mentioned this in the post through the uncertainty character. But when you can clearly identify that you're scared of something, or that you're fearing something, or there's something there that is preventing you from making the most out of a situation, saying that, oh, that is uncertainty, or oh, that is self-doubt, and knowing that is self-doubt, and you could look at it and really clearly understand its texture and how it makes you feel and how it's actually beatable, then I think it's a really powerful tool. So the identification of a problem or a force in your life that exudes some sort of negative charisma, I think is really important. And Stephen Pressfield really helped to do that with the introduction of his book. So that's a big influence on this post. And also The Dip by Seth Godin. It's a really, really short book. It's a tiny book. But the concept of The Dip was it just really, really struck me. And you know, you might be saying, well, it's the dip, it's the trough of sorrow, or it's the valley of despair. Like, we've all seen this concept before. And that's the thing about, I think, a lot of writing and, you know, a lot of things that are out in the ether about this kind of stuff, is that many people might say, dude, this topic has been beaten to death. There's no more that you can add to this particular topic. It's so saturated. And I think that's bullshit, yo. Like, straight up. I really think it's bullshit. I think that there is so much that could go into a topic that we have to construe and we have to formulate in different ways, because I think ideas, you could say them in so many different ways, and certain ways will stick more than others, right? So if I just go up to someone and say, hey, self-doubt is a bad thing, they'll be like, yeah, sure. And there's no sticking point to it. It just will be weird and awkward, right? But if you were to kind of communicate, hey, yeah, self-doubt, if you kind of look at self-doubt, really, it really is a reflection of the things that you love most. It's kind of a mirror image of it, because if you did not have that care for it in a way that it really resonated with you, then you wouldn't have any doubt to begin with, right? And even that statement could be like, oh yeah, I've heard that, been there. So then it's like, okay, well, how do I put this in a format where it could resonate and it's not boring and it hasn't been beaten to death? And that's where this whole post kind of came from. It's like, okay, how do I take a fresh look on an age-old concept of being able to beat laziness, self-doubt, uncertainty, and not really just beat it, but be able to kind of coexist with these things? And like I mentioned in the post too, when you beat a game, especially the most iconic villains, and I put Bowser from Mario Bros, like M. Bison from Street Fighters from back in the day, like, these guys don't die. They don't actually crumble and it's over. It's rare. These guys come back, right? They're just weakened in their power towards the end of the game, because you've developed so many skill sets. You're so invested into this world and have learned how it works and learned the rules and the solutions, that by the time you approach the last boss, you're like, hey, let's go. I know you got a lot of shit. I know you're fierce. You know, you might fuck me up, but I have what it takes to beat you, right? And it's not about killing you, but I could beat you. And usually, like, the game doesn't end, and then, like, this gory, you're just gouging their eyes out and just, like, juggling them. Maybe in God of War, it's kind of like that. But, you know, in the more traditional games where it's like a series, the boss usually has the opportunity to kind of flee, or you allow the boss to kind of retreat. And there's something symbolic in that. It's like this retreat. You've overcome that moment. You have this feeling of kind of power, empowerment, that you were able to do this, but knowing that it will be back again one day. So you're preparing yourself, you're solidifying yourself. And that's what I was trying to do with this post, and to kind of go bit by bit, character by character, from laziness to self-doubt to uncertainty, and kind of all back over again, because it doesn't stop. And you could go into one level, you could beat one level, and then you'll be right back down there the next day. But there really is a utility in having the ability to have beaten it once. And I think that out of the three characters, the one that resonated with me the most is self-doubt. Laziness is something that I struggled with, and, you know, I still struggle with now too, but I really think that getting into the rhythm and the habit, and knowing that you can parse your big daunting goals into smaller ones that become much more fun to approach every day. Like, now there's an element of fun that goes into, okay, for today, for the, you know, 3-hour block of time, I'm going to just work on this. And, you know, knowing that it's done, then I could go into rewarding laziness, which I talk about in the post. But rewarding laziness is when you can be lazy, you can chill, you can have a drink, you can just kick it, you know, with your partner, with the homie or with the friend, and it's okay. Like, you feel great. As opposed to, you don't get shit done the whole day, and because you spend the whole time, you know, playing 5 hours of whatever, and you just feel like shit afterwards. There's a difference between the two. But when you're able to compartmentalize what you need to do for the day, and you do it, then you have this golden period of rewarding laziness, which is great. So, you know, I think human beings, like, you know, we're much more like monkeys than we may think we are, and we still have a very concrete kind of reward-driven behavior, and rewarding laziness is kind of one of those things that makes us feel good about getting our shit done. So laziness is more about you develop a habit that allows you to beat it consistently. But self-doubt is a difficult one. It's a really difficult one because it rears its head all the time. And I think, you know, in the post, self-doubt was one of those characters that I wanted to spend a lot of time on, just really parsing through, because it really is, from especially all the artists that I know and the creative people that I know, like, it's really at the crux of a lot of the things that they experience. And I think sometimes we just forget why self-doubt exists in the first place, and instead of listening to what it's saying, because self-doubt just is not that smart. It always says the same shit. It always tells you you're not good enough. Who are you to do this? Why are you even trying this? Shit that you would never imagine a friend to say to you, self-doubt will say. Because it resides in the contents of your consciousness rather than outside of it. So it, as a result, we just have this tendency to give it more credence and validity, but it actually doesn't deserve that. What's important about self-doubt is to really embrace it and to know why it exists. And it exists because you just care so much for whatever that endeavor is. And that's a paradox there. It's like, okay, if we care so much about something, why can't we just forge ahead and do it without this crippling self-doubt there? And I think that's just another part of the fuckery that natural selection has embedded in us, is that when we care so much about something, we tend to doubt ourselves about it. And not only does this happen in the pursuit of meaningful work endeavors or passion projects, it happens in the form of relationships as well. You know that feeling where when you are so appreciative of somebody, and you know, you have like a best friend, or you have someone that you really could confide in, you kind of feel like you're burdening them when you're bringing up your problems or you're bringing up things that are going on in your life. You feel that you're being like a sore. You feel like you're not contributing to their happiness, and you could kind of feel like, all I do is just complain to them or whatever. And you feel this sense of like you're burdening that person that you love by presenting the most accurate version of yourself. And that is another example of self-doubt at work, where there is someone that you just truly love, but you're taken aback, and you think that you're actually providing a negative result to their life by talking to them about what's really going on in kind of in your area of the world. So that's another paradox there, because the person that loves you is like, hey, yeah, I really appreciate that you're telling me all this stuff, because it really means that you could be vulnerable with me. But on the other side, you could feel like, oh man, this person doesn't like me, you know, I'm just being a burden. It's weird. It's really weird. So that misalignment, I think, is really prevalent in so many situations. And I wanted to address that through self-doubt and through the different tools. So I think when it comes to self-doubt, there really has to be a period of reflection where you really take a step back and just kind of tell yourself, hey, yeah, what I'm doing is a good thing, and you only exist because, or self-doubt, you only exist because I'm on the right path. And it's at its loudest when you're at that dip point, when you're doing so much and you're just not seeing the results. I think that's when it really rears its head. But with reflection, you could get past self-doubt. It doesn't mean that it's gone, but you have the ability to move past it and continue working on what you know is the best version of yourself. And just the last thing I want to touch on is just with uncertainty. I feel like I'm regurgitating a lot of this stuff, but I'm kind of just getting my, kind of like my thought process out there of why I kind of wrote all these things out. And uncertainty is just that piece that always exists. It's going to be in the ether. It will be something that is there. And we really have to learn how to coexist with it. And I really think that the fear of uncertainty and the unknown lies at the heart of what makes us do very irrational things and makes us really double down on tribalism and dogmas and things that make us feel like we're certain of the world. It's something that I have to check myself a lot on too, because sometimes, I might one day be like, oh yeah, I got shit figured out. I think I understand how this person works or how this works. And in reality, I've just touched the first snowflake of the iceberg on whatever there is to know about the world. You know what I'm saying? So, it was my way of also reminding myself that there is a lot more that goes into knowing there's a lot about being humble. There's power to humility when it comes to looking at the world. And sometimes we approach it in a way where it's scary, but I wanted to remind the reader and also myself that it really, when you can name your fear of uncertainty, then you can learn to embrace it. When you can identify that you're scared of the unknown, then you can move forward in accepting it. And I think what that does is that it really unleashes what I call the inner child. But definitely the inner child exists, I think, in all of us. I see it with all my loved ones. I see when people are being playful and people are curious, and we know those parts that bring us that excitement. We know what makes us just innately curious and look at something and think it's fascinating. Because things really are fascinating. I was hanging out with my godson the other day, and he would just like pick up a piece of paper, and he's like, whoa, just looking at it with such incredulity. I think that's a word. And when I objectively look at it, I'm like, yeah, fuck, that piece of paper is amazing, dude. I don't know how that was created with all those, with the lines on it. And yeah, I know where it comes from, but what does it take for that to be created? And I could YouTube it or Google it or whatever, but like there really is something really amazing about something that simple. How that arrived here, like all the logistics, how we even thought to create something like that, what that paper represents, that you could write on it. There's so much dimensions to these simple things. And, that's what makes us kind of, we get amused when we see kids become so fascinated by the ordinary, because we know inherently deep inside that everything really is fascinating if you take the time to look at it enough. And I think that's where the inner child comes from. It's to be riveted by the unknown. And I think that's really at the crux of what drives a lot of stuff I write for More to That, is to make my inner child come out as much as I can, but also approach it with the kind of sword of perception and the shield of reflection, which allows me to reflect on how these things have come to be, because the inner child tends to ask why. And you could ask why a lot, but if you keep asking why, there's no real wisdom in that. You have to start looking at things from the how. And when you combine those two things with the humility that you're not going to figure out all the hows, I think the combination of all those elements is what draws you closer to what I call, and Stephen Pressfield also calls, the unlived life. So that, I don't know how long this thing has been. I originally thought I was just going to do like a 5 to 10 minute talk about the post. But yeah, this was just kind of a quick kind of behind the scenes look, or I guess like a just idea vomit of what went into creating this post. I hope it illuminated some things that you may have been curious about, where some of the inspirations came from. Once again, the two books are The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield and The Dip by Seth Godin. Those really helped to structure the kind of core elements of this post. This post took a while to do. Like, there's almost 60 drawings, and each drawing takes a while too. And, you know, over 9,000 words. I have a post in the pipeline that may shape up to be a long one, but I think I'm going to try something different. Well, I'm already trying something different right now with a really short post. That will probably come out just like a week after the Quest of the Unlived Life comes out. And it's another way of experimenting with an idea that I have, and just kind of getting it out there in a bite-sized way. So thanks again for all your support on Patreon. I really, really appreciate it. It really is an honor to do this and have patrons like you support the work. And I'll see you around. Thank you so much for all your time and for being such an awesome reader/person. Thanks.